If you're observing Yom Kippur today and happen to be listening to Air Talk, as you are, if you're observing today and tuned in, we appreciate it very much. If you're listening on the podcast, we hope it was a very valuable day for you on Yom Kippur. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about the way the day was observed for observant Jews, given the COVID pandemic and how folks have dealt with that. We've had so many major holidays, and of course, Thanksgiving and Christmas are coming up, but want to hear from listeners tomorrow about how Yom Kippur has been observed in this era of COVID-19. Coming up a little bit later this hour, we're going to open up for listeners to call in. We want to hear from you whether you've had friends from your past, maybe fellow students you went to school with from years ago you hadn't heard from in a long time, ex-girlfriends or boyfriends or spouses who you hadn't heard from in a long time, but you heard during this time of COVID-19. My sense is, just anecdotally from conversations with people, that there's been a lot of that reconnecting, probably in part because of how locked down we've been at home. And so people have been thinking about their friends, people from their past reaching out. I want to hear from you about those experiences later this hour. But right now, the latest on COVID-19, joining us from UCLA Fielding School of Public Health, Professor of Epidemiology and Community Health Sciences, Dr. Robert Kim Farley. Dr. Kim Farley, welcome back. So good to have you with us.
Larry, it's a pleasure to be back.
So as you're looking at where we stand right now, Southern California's COVID-19 cases, what's your assessment?
Well, I think that we are making some progress. As you remember, we had the first wave and we plateaued out and then had a surge again after July, we are now coming back down off of that. So although we still have widespread transmission here in Los Angeles, it's getting closer to where we may be able to move to the next tier. It doesn't mean that we're out of the woods, but it means that we may be able to start opening up a bit more. Again.
Now, a number of states, not California, but other states, have seen a rise in positive cases and are starting to see some increases in hospitalizations. We're several weeks away now from the Labor Day weekend, but do you expect that might be a result of people going out with friends and family on the holiday weekend?
Yes, I think you're correct, Larry. It has been a phenomenon we've seen in the rest of the United States more than we're seeing necessarily here in California. But the idea that we did have that second plateau, we were dropping down, but now they are, again, seeing increases occurring. And, again, it takes, a couple of weeks from the time of exposure to where you could end up with the disease, and then another week or so before you would get to hospitalization, and maybe another week after that for death. So those are lagging indicators. I often think of it being like steering a super tanker ship. You turn the rudder, takes a long time for that tanker to move. Same here. As you open up the economy or close back down the economy, it takes a long time to actually see the result of what you did.
What do you think about reopening indoor seating at restaurants? For many restaurants, they don't have a patio dining capability on takeout. They're just not, in delivery, not making anywhere near what they were. And of course, they have to distance for the seating, whether it's inside or they'll have to whenever indoor dining resumes. What would you want to see before you would feel comfortable with indoor distanced restaurant seating?
So a couple of things, Larry. Firstly, we want to move again from this widespread transmission down to that next tier, still substantial spread, but at least it means that we are in the right direction. And as you rightly pointed out, it doesn't mean that suddenly we flip a switch and it's just back to usual with indoor dining. No, that'll be started out with, about 25% capacity, people well spaced out. Again, obviously servers, with masks and things like this. So there's a very extensive checklist for restaurant establishments put out by the L.A. County Department of Public Health that they have to adhere to, because they're, in fact, inspectors going out now to make sure that, they are adhering to these standards. So I think with everyone playing their part, maintaining this physical distancing within the restaurants, again, at only 25% capacity at the beginning, I think that, we can, again, slowly tighter this opening.
Well, and we have Orange County to look at, right? So you I assume that's the place to closely follow to see what happens there.
Exactly right. I have a sense that there may be a little bit sometimes more mask use resistance going on in Orange County than we have seen here in Los Angeles, thankfully. But, you know, that's another thing, is that people have to also be recognizing that when they are out, they need to be wearing masks and staying the physical distancing. It's the same message we've been trying to give and continue to give, but it's important that we don't get mask fatigue of people stopping that really important public health practice at this stage.
You have questions for Dr. Robert Kim Farley of UCLA's Fielding School of Public Health. We're at 866-893-KPCC, 866-893-5722, or the AirTalk page, kpcc.org. You can also tweet at AirTalk or post on our AirTalk Facebook page, 866-893-5722. We look forward to hearing your questions for Dr. Kim Farley. Doctor, let's talk a bit about vaccination rates. I was reading a piece making the argument that even if we don't get a high percentage of Americans willing to take a vaccine early on, that immunizing those who are most vulnerable and older, who are going to be the most likely to want to be vaccinated against COVID-19 because of that vulnerability, that even doing that will make a huge impact on numbers of cases and, of course, an even greater impact on severity of illnesses and hospitalizations. Your response to that?
Larry, that's a good point. That article was a very important one in the sense that it was emphasizing that, again, just like we're trying to protect the most vulnerable in our community now, we need to, when we have vaccine, ensure that they have access to vaccine. Something like 85% of the deaths that have occurred have been in the 15% of the population that's over age 65. So, again, that's a high important group to prevent hospitalizations and severe complications that could result in death. So if we can ensure that our vaccination efforts are targeted to elderly and also healthcare workers and those that are in the essential services that are, you know, interacting with the public, these groups already know that they are at risk. I think their desire to have vaccine is much higher than some that have had some more skepticism of vaccine. So I think that a couple of things will happen. One is that we will not have enough vaccine at the beginning anyway for everyone, so there will have to be some rationing to these higher groups that are at higher risk. And I think that those groups actually are going to be much more inclined to uptake the vaccine because they know they are at risk, and they know people that in their age group or with their pre-existing conditions or the types of jobs that they have died. So I think that will be important, that will then, you know, reduce the severity and deaths that we will see. But in the end, we want, of course, the vaccine to be taken up by the whole population. I think that as we have vaccines coming out, and we're fortunate that I think some vaccines will have very high efficacies and low side effects, so that people then get confidence in saying, well, this was looks like a very good vaccine, and we'll see more and more demand come up. Because ideally, we'd like to get to a point where 60-70% of the population becomes immune, because when we do that, we achieve this community or immunity, or herd immunity as it's sometimes called, that then basically stops the virus in its tracks. And it doesn't find enough people to infect to make it able to propagate in the community, and we actually can stop the transmission.
We're talking about a piece from the Wall Street Journal a couple days ago by Professor Tomas Phillipson of the University of Chicago. He was a member of the White House Council of Economic Advisors and its acting chairman over the past 3 years. His piece about the importance of the most vulnerable and older Americans being vaccinated and what the significant benefit he would see coming from that. We're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. JSK asks, are people 65 years of age and older participated in the vaccine trials? Dr. Kim Farley?
Yes, Jeff, thank you very much for asking the question. Yes, they are, and in fact, also one effort's being really made to try to recruit people of color, black populations, Hispanic populations, because they have been, in a sense, disproportionately affected by the COVID disease, and so we want to make sure that they also are well represented in vaccine trials.
All right. Dave says the BBC just reported that African countries recorded drops in COVID-19 cases, despite the fact of having denser populations and not having the kind of advanced medical care in many cases as the United States. Dave asks, what can we learn from them?
Well, I think a number of things. Firstly, the statistics are still somewhat variable country by country in terms of its testing capability. So they do not have the same robustness of testing that we are seeing in the developed world. So I think we have to take some of that into effect. I think also we have to take into effect the age distribution of many of the countries in Africa, much, much younger populations than we see here in the United States and other developed countries. And so that means that there's going to be less hospitalizations, less deaths as well. So it, the impact will not be as severe. I think, thirdly, we have to take into account that there's a lot more rural populations in Africa as well. There are some densely populated cities like Lagos, and you have, same situation you have here in L.A., but many of the places in Africa are much more sparsely populated, which also tends to reduce the transmission of disease.
I also wanted to ask you about children who are exposed to the novel coronavirus, why we see typically, and I know there are some examples where they do have complications, but how typically it seems that kids are asymptomatic, or if they do develop symptoms, it seems like typically they recover more quickly and recover well. What do we think is going on with that?
Larry, I think there's a few things going on. In fact, interesting that you ask, because there's an article in the New York Times just today referring to a study that looked at what they call the innate immune response. And this is something that's stronger in children than it is in adults. It deals with the body being able to produce things like interleukin and interferon gamma that basically can be a first defense against an unknown virus like COVID-19, and children seem to be much better at this. So this is one reason these scientists posited that there may be less severity in children. Another has been that it turns out that in the lungs of children, there's a receptor cells that have ACE2 receptor cells, and these are the things that the virus attaches to, and children happen to have less of these ACE2 receptor cells in their lungs than do adults. So that's another reason why they may not be coming down with disease as readily.
Dr. Robert Kim Farley, always a pleasure. Thank you so much, sir. Stay well, and we appreciate your being with us again on Air Talk.
Thanks again, Larry. It's my pleasure, as always.
Thank you. From the UCLA Fielding School of Public Health, Professor of Epidemiology and Community Health Sciences, Dr. Robert Kim Farley. He was Los Angeles County Department of Public Health, Communicable Disease Control Director for County Public Health, and a former senior official with the Centers for Disease Control and the World Health Organization. Coming up, we're going to take your calls and find out people from your past who you hadn't heard from in years that connected with you during this time of COVID-19. Just heard so many stories about people in the pandemic connecting up with people from years ago. We're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. I want to hear from you how that went. What prompted you to reach out to someone you hadn't talked with in years? Or what it was like, pro or con, hearing from people from your past. 866-893-5722. We'll be back in 90 seconds.